BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from pro and college basketball to UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast. I'm Megan Robinson, joined, of course, by Justin Southwell and Eve Batoba. Guys, not too much news this week around Oklahoma State football, which, considering the offseason, I will take it. But how are you guys doing?
You know, we're doing good. Just trying to find whatever news is out there, right? trying to keep up with whatever is happening. But sometimes no news means good news. You know, you're just building in silence, letting the team do their thing, Coach Glass taking reins of the offseason program, and just, you know, we'll see some of the product during spring ball.
I think that's how coaching staff would prefer to have it. Like, just leave us alone. We don't want to talk to anybody right now, and we're just going to get after it. You know, work in the shadows.
There might not be a lot of Oklahoma State news. However, there is some potentially big news coming to the college football world. Games might be getting shorter. Sports Illustrated reported talks regarding clock rule changes are in their final stages and could be implemented as soon as this fall. There are four rule changes in discussion, ranging from not that bad to, wow, that's actually a very big deal.
Yeah.
One, consecutive timeouts would be prohibited, which is also the rule in the NFL, like when it comes to icing the kicker, situations like that. So that is already a rule in the NFL. That's number one. Number two, no longer extending the first or third quarter for an untimed down if the quarter ends on a defensive penalty. That down would be clocked starting next quarter. Those two, not that bad. Makes sense.
Not bad at all.
Where things get interesting. Number three, the clock will continue to run after offense gains first downs, with the exception of inside the 2 minutes to go in the half. A study shows that would eliminate 7 to 9 plays per game. And the biggest one of them all, clock would continue to run after an incomplete pass once ball is spotted for the play, which research has showed that could eliminate about 15 plays per game. Guys, what do you think of these possible changes, which look like might get the vote in their favor this year?
I mean, what are we even doing? Like, we're trying to change things that don't need to be changed, and we have so many other things that people bring up that we need to worry about. But let's talk about these, all right? So, I mean, I can just see it now. Hey, remember back in the day whenever coaches used to be able to make consecutive timeouts? Yeah, man, those were crazy times. Like, the game lasted hours because of that. I mean, what? Like, you remember those rare occasions whenever we used to have, you know, untimed downs at the end of first and third quarters? What a nightmare.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah, those we're glad we don't have to worry about that anymore. Like, those what are we crazy. Talking about? But okay, so you mentioned like clock continuing to run after the first down, except inside a 2 minute before half. So that's how it's done in the NFL too, right?
Yes.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I don't know if it stops at 2 minutes in the NFL, but I know it runs after a first down, hence the reason offenses need to like spike it or hurry it up or anything like that.
Okay, yeah. So I'm in favor for anything that mirrors the NFL in a lot of ways. So I think that that's fine if we want to go that way. If it shortens by 7 to 9 plays, whatever. What was it? 7, 8, or 9 plays?
Yeah, 7 to 9, and then the other one was like up to 15 plays.
Sure. I mean, but if we're talking about those aren't – that's not like a major difference. But if we go on to that fourth proposed rule that you said – like, this is almost disrespectful to the game of football.
It has a huge impact on how it's played.
Yeah. I mean, what are we even talking about? This isn't soccer. Okay. We don't need a running clock. So I don't get this one at all. Now I will say this, there is one positive of soccer. There aren't any commercial breaks because they have the running clock. So if you really want to make the game shorter, let's talk about all the commercial breaks that we have to deal with. I would say that's going to, people are going to be like, you know, we're going to lose money. You know, that's how we get all of our ad revenue. Listen, there's ways around it because soccer can, they still make money, right?
Yeah. Okay. It's not the same. I mean, unless you want to see a whole bunch of football jerseys with advertisements all over them, then yeah, you can go ahead and make money that way.
It doesn't have to be that way though, because like I've seen digital ads that are implemented on the field. Like, or
that's advertisement over
MLB. They've had it for, you know, pitcher's mound and stuff like that. But ad graphics can pop up on the screen for certain aspects of the game. You know, oh, there's another Paycom first down or another Express Employment Professionals touchdown. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, according to our sonic speedometer, Jaden Nixon just reached 22 miles an hour on that kick return for a touchdown. So there's, I feel like there's other ways that we can do this.
I mean, that's just, you know, that's advertisement overload. I would hate to see that many. Everything doesn't need a sponsor, okay? You know, the reason why football is as great as it is, especially as a television product, is because of, you know, the timeouts. It's because of the stoppage in between plays. That's what makes it as profitable as a business as it is. Now, I mean, with that being said, I just want to talk about how this affects a team like Oklahoma State. I mean, you talk about a team that's, especially Mike Gundy, who knows how to manipulate timeouts, who knows how to get teams to spend timeouts whenever they don't necessarily want to because of substitutions or whatever, right? Like getting the team to use consecutive timeouts and like just completely getting them to waste it and burn it. Like that stuff really matters. That all goes into the strategy. And I can't remember for the life of me which player it was that said this. This was probably back in 2014 or 15. I don't know if it was TCU whenever Trevor Boykin was playing there. It may have been Baylor. But they said, look, this is the Big 12 Conference. We play a whole bunch of spread teams. We play a whole bunch of tempo teams all the time. But there is nothing like playing in Stillwater and having to keep up with that offense over there. They just do things at a different speed than everybody else. And that always stuck to me. That's really an unfair advantage that we have, you know, because of Coach Gundy, because of the way that we, you know, we really harp on that tempo. And whenever you're taking away the clock continuing to run after an incomplete pass. Like, I don't know, things just seem like it's affecting all that. Now, I'll never put it past, you know, Gundy and his ability to actually just take the new rules and manipulate it. But if you're saving an extra 15 plays per game, you know, what are we actually doing? I remember like our team, our school, whenever we were playing anyway, we were one of the first schools in the country that was regularly putting up 80 plays per game. 80 snaps per game on offense. You're just like, what? Like, how is this happening? So, I don't know. I think that can be something that that puts us at a disadvantageous situation.
But, like, also, like, outside of commercial breaks, okay, if we don't want to eliminate that, official reviews also take up a ton of time. So, yeah. Even if we implement these new rules, like, we might not even be shortening the games because some of these games have review after review after review, and the game just goes on and on. So if we implement these new rules, there's a potential for the games to last still like way longer than we're anticipating because we're not even considering the actual problem of why the case is that we're playing these long games.
Well, it's still going to be a 3.5-hour television slot no matter what. So, yeah, you can maybe shorten the play on the field. It's still like in real time, it's still going to last 3.5 hours. And the reason why is because at the end of the day, it's a television product and you have to be able to sell those commercials.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings because like sometimes college football games push like the 4.5-hour mark and that just gets excessive. And there are times too, I think it was the Tech game this year. I think the first quarter took an hour. Like, I looked at the clock. I was at the game and I looked, I'm like, we're only 3 minutes into the first quarter. What is why is this taking forever? So I see your point. Even I agree that the slot's going to be what it is, but you know, at ESPN, that's when they, you know, let's say our game ends, if we're a 2 o'clock game, we end at 5 instead of 6. And then maybe, you know, here's a fourth quarter of this other game happening, of the TCU game. We can flip it on our network, or we go into a scoreboard show. So it's not, it might not necessarily take up that whole time. You just go into the post game, pregame, half, you know, what the scoreboard show is what they call it. And just start running highlights of all the other games. I mean, I love football. I do. And, you know, but you saw it with baseball, with like the pitch clock, you know, those games are, especially Red Sox Yankee games, whew, those things took like 4 or 5 hours, and people love the event. But at a certain point, it's like, especially when it's constantly stopping and being reviewed and there's no flow of the game, it just, it's not as fun. If things are constantly, I mean, penalty flags are different, but if the play is stopping. However, I mean, my big question with, and to your point about the plane, I read that in a football game, in an average football game, there's only actually 11 minutes of actual playing. The rest is running the clock down, moving the chains, all of that stuff, which doesn't really necessarily pertain to this. I mean, maybe that makes it 9 minutes of playing, but I thought that was so interesting. And when you watch a football game, it's so true. You know, you run a play that takes maybe 10 seconds, maybe 20 if it's a long play downfield, but then it's also, okay, we got to move the chains up. We're going to milk the clock, call our next play, get in formation. Is there a flag? Okay, that stops the clock again. And so that, I just thought that that was a really interesting stat when I read it. Out of 60 minutes of play and 3 hours of watching, there's actually only 11 minutes of action happening on the field.
Yeah, I mean, we see like the condensed games or the highlight games, and it makes it a little bit more of a pleasurable viewing experience on YouTube the next day for some cases. And it's like, man, what if we were just like, it's impossible for football, but that is interesting how it is that much shorter than the actual experience itself.
Look, I'll tell you, if we're trying to create some new rules, you know who they should be looking at is the dang XFL.
Yes. Okay.
The XFL has, what is it, like a 3-point option? Like, hey, if we want to, you know, after a touchdown, we want to, you know, put 3 extra points, you back it up to the 10-yard line and you do it that way. Or essentially make it and take it to where, like, after your possession ends, you then go into 4th and 15 and you have the opportunity to get the ball back again. I love the kickoff rules where it's pretty much like the two teams are 10 yards apart from each other. They engage after the returner actually makes the catch. Like, that stuff is fun, right? Like, it's actually really fun to watch. Like, that's who they need to be looking at if they're talking about these rule changes. You know, some of this other stuff, you know, whatever. How big of a difference is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm also saying, though. It's like, we're looking at these rule changes, and I'm just like, why? Like, these aren't things that people are really wanting changed in the game of football. Like, maybe a few people are concerned about the length of the game, but probably not that many. Like, your Saturday is going to be spent surrounding your favorite football team, and who cares if it's 3 hours or 4 hours? You know, a lot of people like the aspect of overtime and free football. So the longer, the better. So I'm just wondering, like, where are these rules coming from? But if we change it too much to look like the XFL, then it's still football, but it's also, you know, we're just changing rules for the sake of changing rules.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I still go back and forth. I think if it's going to pick up the pace to where it's a more exciting game where it feels more like you're in a 2-minute drill, where, you know, that could be different.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it's still the same pace. And I just double checked my notes. I don't know if the incomplete pass rule. So the clock after a first down, it's like the NFL, but with the exception of inside the 2 minutes, it would continue to run after a first down. And which I do think that in the NFL, it doesn't stop. But with the incomplete pass rule, it just says it would continue to run after the ball is spotted after an incomplete pass. And I don't have anything written about 2 minutes, so I don't know if that would apply to 2 minutes. And if it did not apply to 2 minutes, that changes everything. Because if you're trying to drive down the field and you're passing the ball, because obviously a run will take up too much time, and you know if it's incomplete, the clock's going to stop. That doesn't really matter anymore, which just can completely change a game.
Yeah, changes everything.
That's not football to me. Like, that's not the 2-minute drill that we're talking about. So
I mean, a huge part of football is the chess match. It's about, hey, understanding when to spike it, when to use a timeout, all those things. So I don't know, maybe I'm just being an old head and I'm just like, you know, keep the thing the way it is. But
Old man Eve, get off my lawn.
Exactly. But,
if these rules are implemented, because obviously college football and NFL are very, very similar. However, they're also very different as far as some different rules, 1 foot in bounds versus two for a catch. How difficult would it be for players to adjust to these rules if they've been playing 3-4 years of college ball without having to worry about the clock running after a first down or an incomplete pass?
Well, not to mention they've been playing almost their entire lives with that too, right?
True.
NFL rules are different from college rules, but college rules are pretty similar to high school and, you know, peewee rules. So it's an adjustment. I mean, you know, it's not to say that they won't be able to adjust, because you come into the program, you have practice, the coaches start emphasizing certain rule changes. You know, I've seen it happen in the NFL. Anytime that there's a rules change, you go and, you know, you make sure that, you know, you harp on it. But sure enough, at some point during the season, somebody's going to forget. And you're going to be like, yeah, that's one of those things I was implemented this year. And you forgot you can't do that, bro. So, I mean, it'll be a learning curve, just like anything else is. It'll probably take 2-3 years for the public even to get fully accustomed to it. Hopefully it's a rule change that actually makes sense and it's explained as to why it was actually implemented.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it would be that hard to adjust to the rules. I think it's drilled in your head in meetings and practice over and over. And sure, you might slip up every once in a while, but I think a lot of like serious college players already look at practice. They try to practice as if they're preparing for the NFL. So, for example, yeah, we have the 1 foot rule in college, but I don't think anybody's trying to, you know, take advantage of that rule by only getting 1 foot in bounds. People practice getting both feet in bounds. So, I think if you can just align it with the NFL as much as possible, that's probably what's best for the game.
I think the NFL should switch to having 1 foot in bounds.
I do too, actually. Yeah.
But you know,
because it's already hard enough to figure out what is and what isn't a catch in the NFL. So,
yeah. Facts. And then by the way, Dez caught it.
Was it Dallas Goedert in the Super Bowl had that catch and he got both feet down in bounds, and then they're like, but then the ball came loose right here.
See,
and then
so
he had third foot down. It's so convoluted with what a catch is. But one other thing, we
slowed it down to like,
right,
you know, 80% of, you know, whatever. And it's like, dude, this is not real.
The one other thing I just thought of, I'm curious to see how this impacts pre-snap penalties, because if the clock's running and you are in a 2-minute drill, you know, and you need to march down the field to win, are you going to be playing faster and not with the clock going because you're under more pressure because it's not clock runs on the snap? No, the clock's running. Does that make sense?
No, that does make sense, right? Putting a lot more importance on the quarterback's cadence.
Yeah.
Right. I think that a lot of college teams actually you don't see much of a cadence. Like QBs aren't practicing that whenever they're in college, and you know you're going to the clap method because they're in shotgun. Especially if they're not under center, you tend to not draw the defensive line offsides as much. And in a spread offense, of course, you don't see a lot of QBs going under center. So I think that would have a tremendous impact. Like whenever you watch the Green Bay Packers, I mean, it feels like every single week Aaron Rodgers is getting free plays from being able to manipulate the cadence. Like I think he is the best in the NFL at it. I was actually really surprised in the Super Bowl watching Jalen Hurts do the same thing. I think he got like 15 extra yards from being able to use the cadence against an aggressive Kansas City defensive line. So, things that are taught in the NFL that, aren't necessarily taught in college, but if college coaches can actually start coaching that up, it could be something that's advantageous to a QB and an offense in the college level.
Yeah. We shall see what happens. We will keep you updated as we learn more about these rule changes and if they are voted on. This is not new this year. They have been talking about implementing these changes for a few years now. This is just the first year that they've actually gained traction. So this is not just completely out of left field. This has been brought up in the past, but now people are like, you know what? maybe we should do this. Enough about generic college football. This is the Believe in OK State podcast. So let's talk a little bit about some of our incoming transfers because we haven't talked enough about them. Rankings have been updated and the results are in. 13 transfer guys, 4 were re-ranked as 4-star recruits, 9 3-star. The national ranking was 14 and Big 12 ranking, guys, we came in at number 2. Like, are we good at recruiting? Are we good at this? Are we good at this?
I would say so. And it goes back to even before the transfer portal was officially a thing. We were already one of the most forward-thinking schools when it came to grad transfers, okay, because grad transfers didn't have to sit out in years. So after the transfer portal actually became a real thing and you no longer had a sit out a season of eligibility, well, Gundy can go into any press conference and say all he wants. Yeah, we don't really believe in a transfer portal, but the facts are the facts. You know, he has been going into transfer portal and recruiting heavily in that thing. So I still get confused about what the heck he meant whenever he said last season that they don't go into the transfer portal, or they don't believe in the transfer portal, because you're seeing the results. You know, of course, the results really show during the actual season. But as of right now, I mean, come on, these whether it's the recruiting coordinator or these coaches, they are all going to work with this transfer portal. So it's just crazy to me how you can get a ranking coming out of high school, and now you're also able to get a ranking as you transfer, right? Like, it's wild to me. But, hey, if it benefits the athletes, more power to them. If it benefits Oklahoma State, more power to it.
Yeah, as far as finding talent, Oklahoma State might be the best in the country at recruiting, especially if you consider budget and that we allocate toward it, because now they're not always going to be the highly touted 4- and 5-star players that you'd want to see coming out of high school. But Oklahoma State knows how to find and develop talent. They might not be on the radar of Ohio State or LSU, but the coaching staff at Oklahoma State can develop them into the guys that can be on that level. Prime examples in Tanner McAllister and Jared Bernard Converse. And here's, I think, a decent example of that for my position group and the wide receivers. How many teams wish they could have either 3-star John Paul Richardson or 3-star Brennan Presley? Probably a lot of teams out there. Yeah. Okay, well, we had them both at the same time. Okay, like, we are that good at recruiting.
Hey, wait a minute. We had Tylan Wallace and Mr. Washington. James Washington, both at the same time as well, right? So that's a really good point you're making there, Justin.
And, you know, and I get it. Like, JPR, he wanted to leave because he wanted full-time reps in the slot. At least that's what we've been told. It's impossible to do whenever you got Presley lining up and splitting time with you. So do I wish we could have figured out a way to keep him here and schematically work around that and have them both compete? Of course. But at least we're in that position to begin with, to have them both here at the same time. And it's because we're that good at recruiting. And it hurts to see guys like Boogie and Bryson Green leave in the transfer portal, because we've worked so hard to get them here. And we've worked so hard in recruiting, finding that talent, just to have them leave for another team. Okay, that stinks. But what can we do but move on and go get DeJuan Stribling and Arlen Bruce IV and Leon Johnson III. Let's develop those guys who want to be here and work with one of the best receiver coaches in the country.
Yeah, I mean, the times have changed, and I think it goes to show that it's one thing to be able to recruit the players and get them on campus. It's another thing to be able to retain the players and keep them on campus. And I think that's probably where, you know, we need to maybe put a little bit more of our resources in.
I think there's probably going to be more of an emphasis on that after seeing what happened this year.
You have to
adapt to that. And I think that they're starting to realize, you know, hey, maybe we could use the transfer portal like we have been, but we don't want to. I think that that's what Gundy was saying, what you mentioned, Eve. Like, I don't believe in the transfer portal. It's not that he doesn't believe in it. It's that he doesn't want to use it. Like, if he doesn't have to, we've already recruited our guys. We just want to develop that talent, let them come up. We don't want to bring in anybody from the outside and let them take a shortcut and cut them in line as far as like the next person who's going to be stepping up. And,
yeah, but we've already been doing that.
So, yeah, I mean, whenever we have to, but like it is a matter of depth in some cases. And then, yeah, whenever we have a mass exodus like we saw this year, you have to go into the transfer portal, and it's looking like it's paying off. So, I mean, we're coming up on this next season, and I'm, you know, kind of starting to get hyped up whenever you see the new star rankings come out and, you know, how the talent is going to fit in with what we've already got.
How much value do you put on stars?
Really not that much. I mean, especially with kind of what I just said, as far as the way Oklahoma State is able to develop that talent whenever they get on to campus. You know, I mean, how many five-star athletes were playing in the Super Bowl this last year? I don't think it was that many, right?
I don't know. I mean, Jalen Hurts was a five-star athlete playing in the Super Bowl. But I mean, I will say that the way that rankings have been done in the past and yesteryear compared to how rankings are being done now, you do tend to get a lot more accurate assessment of where players are supposed to be, right? Like nowadays, you know, I think back in the day, you get a Bobby Wagner, two-star recruit, goes on to be a Hall of Fame level linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks and the LA Rams. But nowadays, you're actually starting to see the guys who are five-star recruits going into college tend to also be first and second round picks in the NFL, and, you know, actually go on to live up to the hype more than they have in the past. And I think that's just an emergence of analytics. That's people being better at capturing data. Now, you know, with that being said, there are a lot of stories, I think, especially at programs like Oklahoma State, where you're finding a bunch of diamonds in the roughs and, you know, getting Marcel Aitman, you know, coming into the program, and he goes on to the NFL. And I think he just had a huge play in the XFL this past weekend too. So
it's kind of a, I would say like not like one-off people, I guess is the way that I answer that question, because if we get a one-off four or five star every once in a while versus the Georgias and Alabamas and Ohio States and Clemsons of the world that are bringing in multiple five-star, four-star talent, that's why they're competing for championships. So I'm not going to dismiss the fact that just because you're four or five star doesn't mean you're going to not pan out to be that. Like more often than not, I think that they do. And that's why they're able to be in that position to be able to compete for championships on a regular basis.
I think that these two, like the transfer portal stars, are really just talking points. People love to debate. They love to say, is this guy really that good? And while I agree with Justin's point, like a four or five star recruit coming into college, and those things do matter based on analytics, I also think it's just one more talking point. And just because you're a five-star recruit in college does not mean you're going to have a successful NFL career, and vice versa. You can be a zero-star recruit in college, work your butt off, make a team, continue to work your butt off. And, you know, like how many stars did Tom Brady have going into Michigan? I don't know, but look at him now, you know, like Malcolm Rodriguez. I don't think he had many D1 offers. I don't know if he had any stars. He's now a starter on the Lions, and if he continues to play like he's played, he could have a very successful NFL career. So I do think that they matter, but I also think these transfer ones particularly are just talking points. At that point, who cares? Go play to win, put 100% effort in. Like that, those are the things that do matter.
If I have a son that is talented enough to play college football, I don't think I want him to be a five-star recruit. You know, give me a 3.5, four-star son, put a little bit of chip on his shoulder. You know, maybe that gives him a little extra boost, right? An extra chip that gets him to perform at a higher level than he thought he'd be able to.
Well, hey, Justin, you have a son. How would you feel if Camden was a?
Four-star. Yeah, we've written out Justin's son's destiny for him.
It's good. It's a positive thing. It's definitely going to Oklahoma State. So
doesn't have a choice.
Unless Princeton comes calling.
Stop.
We've had this conversation.
OSU, Princeton of the Prairies.
That's right. Well,
orange and black. True story. For those who don't know, our colors are orange and black because we had a tie to Princeton. And they're like, they're orange and black. We want to be orange and black. That was. fix.
Prince of the Prairie, baby.
Yeah. We used to be the Tigers and all that.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
Hey, fun facts, a little OSU trivia if it ever comes up at a trivia night at the bar.
Yeah. Last night I didn't go, but my coworkers went to trivia and they had they're like, what's OSU's motto? And they guessed like loyal and is like three words that make up OSU's motto. What would you guys say that it was?
Loyal and true.
Okay. Justin.
Oh yeah. I mean, three words that make up our motto.
Yeah.
Ride, ride, ride.
Yeah. Loyal and true. It can't be like just football. I would say discipline and toughness, but
yeah, it was like scholarship, something, yes, something else. It was like the three pillars of like a land grant university.
Okay, I've seen the academic logo. Yeah, that's. Yeah,
but I'm like, is that the motto? Because I would say go Pokes, which is not three words. I understand that, and or loyal and true.
Here comes bullet.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Come on now.
We are cowboys.
Dun, 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 dun. Wait, that's not. Yeah, okay, never mind. That's a commercial.
It is a commercial, but you knew where I was going.
Is it because we are farmers? Is that where you're going with that?
You know? Either way, it's not scholarship and.
Yeah, but that was. Yeah, so that was what I learned today, and I was like, "That's not that."
So that's kind of like Harvard with their like Veritas type of thing, like their motto of like truth and. Something,
I don't know. You know, I guess at the end of the day, it is a higher education institution, so you got to put something like that in there.
Yeah,
only loyalty and truth matter.
I feel you.
Let us know what you think
football
should be. Well, before we go, it's time for Oklahoma State Athletics. News and notes, right before we started recording this podcast, we found out that Oklahoma State baseball won their home opener this week today, 2-0, and pitched a combined no-hitter. So
let's go.
Great job. Great job, baseball. Keep it
great
up.
Great job, baseball. Like,
after that blowout loss to Arkansas last week, it wasn't great, but hey, it's fine. No-hitter, O-Bright season opener. Get your tickets. Go see a game this year.
It's going to be a long baseball season on the way to the College World Series. So, you know, a little hiccups along the way, nothing we can't overcome.
Also, last week we talked about how wrestling bedlam was coming up. Oklahoma State won again. So those Sooners fans hating on us, saying, calling us little brother, we just won 17 straight bedlams and haven't lost at home in wrestling since 1999. So,
suck it, OU.
Think big picture, not just football, because we own you.
What's really crazy about that, Meg, just real quick, like Oklahoma historically has a really good wrestling program, and they are really good. It's just that Oklahoma State's that much better. And it's nice that we have that over them. And I know like a lot of OU fans don't care about wrestling, but they should, because it's a really good program. But I will say, like, there's so many parallels between that and the reverse side for us for football. It's like we're so good in this last decade and then come up short so many times. So hey, we can relate to you, even if we're brothers, we can relate. So
what's crazy to me too is that Leroy Smith, John Smith's older brother, they grew up OU fans. For people who are unaware, the Smith family grew up in, they're from Del City, Oklahoma. They grew up OU fans. John Smith is being recruited by OU and he ultimately chose OK State. So what's just insane to me that if he made the decision to go to OU, the wrestling trajectory here could be a completely different story, because without Leroy, you don't get John, you don't get Pat, you don't get Mark. So Thank you, Leroy, for making that decision, because I think it was Pat was the four-time All-American and four-time champion. And, you know, John Smith has been the coach here for 30-plus years, Olympic gold medalist. Like, that decision from Leroy is why the entire Smith family is now synonymous with OSU wrestling, and it could have easily gone a very different way. So, history with Meg on the Believe in OK State podcast.
I love it.
I did a 45-minute documentary on the program, so I've taking a deep dive into OSU wrestling. But more,
as everyone should.
Yes, you can watch it on Inside OSU. Justin, you're a wrestling fan. You should watch it. You might like it. But more positive Oklahoma State news. Our indoor track team, the men.
Yeah.
Unofficial indoor world record for the DMR, the distance medley relay at the Arkansas qualifier over the weekend. A DMR is it's a relay race with a 1200, 400, 800, and 1600. Ryan Shoppy, who ran the mile, he did it in 3 minutes and 52.84 seconds. That's less than a minute a lap. Like, that is half my mile time. That is absolutely insane.
That's crazy. I wish.
My hamstrings just got tight thinking about that. I used to absolutely hate running the 400. I can't even imagine doing an 800. Like, 800 sounds like the worst race in track and field.
Oh, it's
just out there killing it.
But I mean, I think my best mile ever is like 6:15, and he ran it in under 4. And I'm like, that's silly.
Yeah, that's some superhuman stuff right there. Yeah. I tell you, every time I think about OSU track and field, I think about the year that Tyreek Hill joined. Like, he's like, hey, here, I'm here, guys. I'm at Oklahoma State. I think I'm going to run track. And then he just goes out there and completely dominates, right? It's like, I have actually his times here, like his personal best, ran the 60 meters 6.61, right? 100 meters 10.19, and then 200 meter 20.14. All-American in the indoor 200-meter dash. Okay. And now he's still, I believe he's still the school record holder for the indoor 60-meter and the indoor 200-meter. And he was a Big 12 champion in the indoor 200-meter dash. Like, he just comes in, and he's just like, yeah, I mean, I know I do football, but let me go try my hand at this whole track and field thing. It's just ridiculous.
Like, ridiculous. 3:52, I'm just I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Like, go to the gym this week and get on a stationary bike and try to get a mile under 4 minutes. Like, it's hard on a bike, and the dude is doing it with his legs.
Ryan, so it's going to be fun to root for him in the Olympics.
Yeah, it's just, I remember in high school, I ran winter track for my sophomore year in between field hockey and lacrosse season to stay in shape. And I was in the best shape of my life. And I actually won medals because I was on relays with very fast people.
You won medals.
I remember I came home one day from a meet. I was like, Mom, I got a medal. I think I actually have a DMR medal. I think I ran the 800 in that.
Ooh.
And yeah. Because I wasn't about to run the 1600 and that, the 400, they needed someone faster, and I just ended up in the 800. But everyone else was fast enough. My mom's like, "Are you kidding me? Like, you are not fast. How did you win a track medal?" And I have two. But where was I going? I remember one time we had a meet, and like, I would just run different events. I didn't really have one. It was literally to stay in shape, and I didn't even want to compete. I just wanted to do the training, which is like crazy. I was like, I'm terrible. And we had a meet, and I had to run the 600, and they put me against like this All-American who was like literally being recruited by D1 schools. And I'm like, why am I running against her? Like, she in a 600 meter, I'm pretty sure she lapped me. And I'm like, this is just so embarrassing. We finished like 30 seconds, and here I am trotting around at like 50. Oh, it was a 600 meter, maybe more than 50 seconds, but you get the point. It was
sometimes you get stuck in those tough heats. It's just
like, I'm just going to be going. It's fine. But I have two winter track medals. So
I love it.
Don't mind me, three sport athlete over here. And then in softball news, OSU shortstop Kylie Naomi was named Big 12 Player of the Week, her first weekly honor of her career. She had an incredible performance at the Tax Act Clearwater Invitational last week. She went 7-for-12 at the plate with 4 home runs, including a 2 home run game in back-to-back at-bats versus Virginia Tech. Hit her first career grand slam versus Louisiana, plus 7 runs scored and 12 RBIs. Out in the field, she was responsible for 3 putouts, 12 assists, and 0 errors, maintaining a perfect fielding average. And her batting average was almost 600. Like, what?
Sheesh. Oh, my goodness. You know what's really cool? What's really cool about that is she has her first career grand slam against Louisiana. I think it was in Louisiana too, wasn't it?
I think they're in Florida.
Oh, okay. They were in Florida. Gotcha. But she's from Lafayette, Louisiana. So it was cool that she's able to do that against, one of the Louisiana teams. So shout out to you, Kylie. Really, really good job. And hey, it seems like she's been at OSU for forever, right? I think she's like a graduate student now, but you know what? It's going to be sad whenever she leaves after this season. So while she's here, let's just, you know, savor the moments as much as we can, because she just keeps climbing her way up the OSU record books every single week.
Cowgirls, for those who are big softball fans, softball is a very popular sport here at Oklahoma State. They are back in action on Friday, the 24th, against New Mexico in the Troy Cox Classic, hosted by New Mexico State. If you plan on taking a trip to Las Cruces for this weekend series of games, do yourself a favor. Go to Andale's. Mexican restaurant, best green chili I've ever had. I have dreams about it. So if you were in Las Cruces, please just eat green chili from Andale's for me, because it will change your life.
New Mexico, they don't mess around with green chili. They know what they're doing. So,
and Las Cruces.
I haven't been there, but I would recommend it just based on that review.
It's so good. Las Cruces is only an hour north of El Paso. So you're basically like an hour 10 from actual Mexico. So trust their green chili.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, the closer you get to Mexico, the better the food gets.
It's so good. So that's my travel advice for all you Pokes fans heading out to New Mexico for this weekend's games. And that's it. That's all we have for this episode of the Believe in OK State podcast, presented by Bet Online. As always, we appreciate you listening. Like, share, subscribe, comment, follow. All of the things. We appreciate each and every one of you listening. I'm Meg, joined as always by Justin and Eve. And go Pokes!
Go Pokes.
Go Pokes. Loyal and true.